Now the fun begins.
Bridget.
Stop! You violated the law.
Welcome back to another episode of the Game Pass Gamecast, your weekly go-to podcast for all things Xbox, Xbox Game Pass, and of course PC gaming, including news, rumors, and conversation around them damn good video games. You can get new episodes of the show when they drop each and every Friday morning on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all other major podcast services. So be sure to subscribe to us, rate us, review us, all that jazz, all the... Every week I'm like, what's the word? All the logistical, like, not interactions, Mike. Impressions. I'm going to write that down because, fun fact, I am an idiot. So I'll probably forget it next week when I do the whole rigmarole. So,
yeah, man, that's the content creator and basically, I guess, younger society's, like, definition on if they're successful or not is how many interactions they're getting.
Yeah, interactions, impressions. It's all buzzwords. It's all fugazi. Fuck it, you know? all that jazz, whatever you do, interacting with us, just make sure you do it and subscribe to us and do all that jazz because we appreciate it. And wherever we're not on, if it's a podcast platform you like, let me know. I'll get us on there. And, of course, follow us on Twitter. That includes all of that. At GPGC Podcast, stay up to date with everything regarding the show, video games alike, and our dope giveaways. I'm your host, as always, Travis White, a.k.a. Travelist, on most internet platforms. You've already heard him already, but joining me now, as always, my partner in crime, Mike Peapack. Mike, my friend, what is good? What is going on? How's the week been treating you? And, of course, what have you been playing this past week?
Yeah, not much has been going on for me personally. I just pretty much been playing Halo 2 Project Cartographer, so playing, like, pretty sweaty 4v4 series on Project Cartographer. Kind of almost basically, I guess it winds up being pretty close to daily. And then outside of that, I pretty much just been playing some Diablo 2, and that's really about it. So not too much in my wheelhouse this this week. Pretty much just sticking to my guns. You know, I'm sure I'll be playing this for the rest of my life, so nothing too crazy going on. What about you? Curious to hear about the query. I'm curious to hear your honest thoughts about that. And then, why don't you let us hear it?
Let me tell you, Mike, and I'll do that in a second. Because trust me, I've got some fucking thoughts on the query, both good and bad. Let's put it that way. I got some fucking thoughts. But before we move on to that, just out of curiosity, because I've been kind of wondering this too. You know, I'm familiar with Project Cartographer, just like, you know, in a way that I was familiar with Halo Online before that got just fucking zapped into oblivion. But so where does that stand right now? Well, like, comparative to now that, you know, obviously MCC is up and running on pretty much all platforms that it should be running on. It, you know, quote unquote, runs great for, you know, everyone who's needing it. Not that I'm saying like, oh, why use this? Why this now? But more so, I guess, in the fact of, does this still, like, do you think this is going to fall victim to kind of the way that Halo Online did when that popped out? And, you know, people were pretty much like, yeah, like, we don't have to we could play Halo 3, you know, what was at one point an official build of Halo 3 for the Russian market on, you know, PC. We're able to play this, and obviously on PC, and that was before MCC came out, but when they on PC, and they were still obviously working on that at that point, but that pretty much, you know, they were pretty much eating, you know, fucking taking 343's lunch and eating it at that time, providing that product. And obviously, you know, a cease and desist came and everything came shut down. Do you think that's something that could happen with this? I mean, I know this is obviously based off of the PC version of Halo 2, so there's some, you know, things with that. But, you know, is this something, since it isn't necessarily a supported Microsoft product, do you see this eventually kind of falling victim to the same things?
I don't know. I think the player base with Project Cartographer is such a small one. And the down, like, it's not publicized that you can download the game without actually purchasing Halo 2 PC. Mm-hmm. So I would say, like, overall, I would say there's probably less of a chance of it getting shut down than Halo Online, because it is still requiring you to purchase the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are ways around it, but, like, it's not right. publicized that you can go get this for free, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, it feels like it'll actually probably wind up being something that I would say is probably relatively safe from getting a cease and desist, simply for that reason. As far as, like, why people play it instead of MCC, I will say that the Project Cartographer plays different than original Halo 2 did, mainly because the Vista port was different than what the Xbox version of Halo 2 was. Uh-huh. And believe it or not, they actually use the exact same Vista port for MCC. A lot of people don't know that.
Oh, interesting.
So it's a similar type game, but the biggest thing with Project Cartographer is there are a few people in the community of, like, the MLG community that still plays MLG series that have some coding knowledge. So we have dedicated servers that we play on. And then also there are a few coders that have added settings into the dedicated servers that allow us to change bullet velocity and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And basically what turning the bullet velocity up does is it makes the shots register a lot cleaner across the board. And there are some other things that have been changed along the way to, like, make beatdown. They try to make beatdowns work a little bit better and things of that nature. So some of those tweaks have been made. And I would say that people generally prefer to play Cartographer, at least in the MLG community, maybe because there's just a small conglomeration of, like, super hardcore players that do it. Mm-hmm. Whereas on MCC, you can't really get Halo 2 Classic hardcore matches that often. Mm-hmm. And if you do, usually the people that have been playing Project Cartographer are usually so good compared to everyone else because they just haven't quit playing. Uh-huh. So that's what I think about it. I don't foresee a cease and desist coming anytime soon. Uh-huh. And I just think people prefer it just based on the way it plays compared to MCC version.
Yeah, and there's something to be said about that, especially, too, for the fact of, you know, like you're saying, I can't go on and get, you know, if I want to play classic hardcore matches of Halo 2 on MCC, I'm either going to be waiting quite a while or I'm just not going to get them, really. Like, it's just not going to happen. And I've always...
Or it's a rotating playlist, so even available all the time, right?
Right, true. So, and that's kind of, like, what so many people, obviously, at launch for Infinite, you know, had an issue with, was the fact of, you know, why are these what would be standard playlists for Halo that are traditional pieces of the multiplayer experience not there day one, and two, also just rotating? Like, it doesn't make any sense. So to me, that says, like, you know, there is, you know, yes, it's a small audience that wants to play that, maybe comparative to the larger body. But at the same time, too, if you can't provide that for them, you shouldn't have an issue with them clearly not saying, hey, go and pirate this game, go and get an ISO of this game, and, you know, or find somebody who's willing to rip an ISO for you, yada, yada. Nobody's saying to go do that, but if you have access to the original release of Halo 2 on Vista, like, here, we have this to satisfy the needs that you want. Come and join. Like, yep. I don't have an, like, I don't know where somebody could have an issue with that. Where, compared to, okay, sure, there was no PC offering for Halo at the time that Halo Online was running, and it was, like I said, at some point a Russian port of Halo 3 on PC. Like, sure, there's a little more wires that are crossed with that. And of course, obviously, it was clear that, you know, now looking back, hindsight 2020, that Microsoft and 343 were working on getting MCC to PC at that time. So, okay, yeah, they own the IP, whatever. But if a need is not being met, and this once again goes to one of those things of the original release of Halo 2, same with Halo 1. I mean, Halo 1's hard to get a hold of, obviously, now with MCC out and a lot of people, you know, playing that. But Halo 1 on PC, I played a fuck ton of Halo 1 on PC. Like, it sucks that you can't, if I want to play that experience, it's not available. Like, it is now kind of abandonware. Same with Halo 2 for Vista. Like, that's where we go back to once again, making sure these games are still available. Sure, it may be only a handful of people want to play them comparative to a larger audience, but at the same time, that doesn't mean that, hey, I can't get that product. Okay, well, I'm going to find another way to get that product. You can't be that fucking mad about it if they go and get that product if you're not going to do anything about it. When people are trying to provide you, hey, if you make it easily accessible to me, I will fucking buy this game from you. Like, I will spend $10 to have that just to be able to play it from time to time or something like that. Okay, you're not going to give me that? Cool. I'm going to go find a fucking way to do that. And if you're not going to, like, get on board with that, I don't know what to tell you. You can't be that fucking mad about it. Like,
yeah.
So, anyways, though, but yeah, I was just curious because you've been talking about it the past couple weeks, and I hope to, like, we both have kind of been saying, you know, for weeks about making sure games are preserved and whatnot. Like, from that end alone, I just hope that, you know, Microsoft backs off. Microsoft just kind of, this isn't harming literally anyone kind of thing.
Yeah, because, like, just full transparency, Microsoft and 343, they have enough other things to worry about than to be like chasing this down and stop and putting a stop to this.
100%. Anyways, though, yeah, on my end, kind of bringing it back full circle. The Quarry. So, yeah, I've been playing The Quarry for the past couple of nights. I didn't get around to booting it up until Sunday, I want to say. And I had a couple other things with work and whatnot pop up that we've only been able to play a handful of times. If you're not obviously familiar with this, this is Supermassive's new game being published by 2K, that, you know, Supermassive, makers of Until Dawn on PS4, the Dark, and most recently the Dark Pictures Anthology series of games, Man of Medan, Little Hope, House of Ashes was the newest one, and then they have another one coming out this fall. But your standard, you know, choose your own adventure style horror games that they're very known for doing. And this game, man, it's exactly what I thought it was going to be, while in some of the best ways, but also some of the worst ways. I haven't, full transparency, we haven't finished it yet. We're on chapter, and this isn't really spoiling anything of it, but we're on chapter 8. I think there's 10 chapters, something like that. So we'll probably wrap it up tonight or something like that. I think it's like a 10-hour game, maybe. So it's a great game. It's much more in the vein of Until Dawn. And both, you know, you and I, Mike, we're big fans of Until Dawn, still are. That this is much more in line with that. It is a more fully fledged, little more breadth to the game than what you would find with a Dark Pictures Anthology game. And I think that really benefits it, because if anything, I think that's one of the things that the Dark Pictures Anthology suffers from, that it is great. I love the idea of having, hey, let's have this self-contained story that's an in and out. You could play it in one night if you really want to, kind of thing. Pass the controller around with a bunch of people, turn the lights off, have a good time. You know, they're perfect games for that kind of experience, but at the same time, to them being moving at such a fucking pace, a boom, boom, a breakneck pace, that I think it does kind of hinder them at times, where it's not concise and to the point, to the extent of, hey, the narrative and what you're, the ambiance and everything that you're wanting out of a horror experience isn't playing well into this, where I think this does that in a much better way. Yes, it's not a 20-hour experience. I wouldn't want a 20-hour experience, nor would I want, you know, a Resident Evil-style experience from these, where I can play it both fast and I can take my time. This, I think at that 9 to 10-hour range is really good for that. And more so than ever, you could definitely tell this has the 2K budget with it, that we're getting licensed music in it. We're getting a ton of, you know, not huge stars, but like, you have bigger stars like Justice Smith has been in a bunch of stuff recently, for Detective Pikachu. He's in the Jurassic World movies. Who else? Brenda Song, a lot of people know from like Disney Channel and shit like that. Ariel Winters from Modern Family. There's a lot of like actors and actresses that you point and know. David fucking Arquette's in it, which is fucking weird. You kind of can point to a lot of like actors in it and say like, okay, yes, I believe that this level of actor would be providing this performance and that fits to the narrative and whatnot. You can definitely tell at times that this game was made under COVID conditions. And I think comparative to some, you could tell, obviously, whether it's, you know, people like Justice Smith, who has been in regularly a lot of bigger projects, who is probably filming potentially a lot more and whose schedule might be a little more condensed and on, you know, kind of all over the place, probably had to do some of their recording and lines and VO on the road. And you could tell because some of the delivery that's given isn't necessarily. And I say this in a, and I say this more in a joking manner, like that I pick and prod this, because I said the same thing about like Don't Nod before. I fucking adore Don't Nod, just like I love Supermassive and the style of game that they make. But I at times sometimes think I'm like, some of the responses and like some of those responses and interactions and dialogue that's made, like, did an AI write this? Like, is this something that is like, do they know how humans interact at times? Like in a, in this kind of situation, like it's more like, I find a comical out of it. Like I find humor in it that I'm like, oh my God, that's so fucking like, why would you say that? That like, okay, you're dying. I'm letting you die right now. Like, just for that, just for talking that way, you are dying now. But I will be honest though. I'm not, no spoilers or anything, obviously, on the game in general, but I'm finding much more enjoyment on the back nine of this game than I did on the front. Wrapping up a couple of the, when you kind of get to more of the meat of the story and not the, you know, oh shit, this is all kind of happening right now at a breakneck speed that we don't know what's going on in terms of like what's happening around these characters. But once they kind of actually slow down a little bit and kind of dig in and they incorporate some more characters and more motives and you kind of get the meat of the plot, it's really good. It's really, it's campy horror. It's fucking great. It's what I want out of Supermassive. And Until Dawn had the same fucking thing, you know, fucking Pilgrim. Like it's cheesy, shitty dialogue. And that's fine because it is a cheesy, campy fucking horror movie. It's supposed to give you the feel of playing a Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Friday the 13th. Like, that's what I want out of these games, and they incorporate it and do it so well, I think. Like, I'm not done with it yet, like I said, but if I had to put, I played quite a bit of it, we're almost done. Like, if I was putting a, if I was putting a grade on this game, like, I would probably say a 7.5 or so, like, depending on how it wraps up and whatnot, 8 maybe. But I think this is definitely a far improvement over the Dark Pictures Anthology. I think it's fucking great in that regard. It is, it's exactly what I wanted. In short, 7.5 may sound bad, but I think this is the closest to back on track that development studio has gotten since Until Dawn, where I fully expect their next standalone project that isn't in the Dark Pictures Anthology. And I even still think then, like, I think the next, I think House of Ashes kind of helped that franchise of the Dark Pictures Anthology kind of get its bearings and kind of level itself out and kind of get a good foundation underneath it to, that was pretty decent. That I think this is, once again, a good, another step forward for them, but a much bigger step forward. That I think this is the game that is hopefully going to get them back on the right track of, yes, when we do get these bigger experiences from Supermassive, they're going to hit, and they're going to be these polished experiences. And that's another thing, too. Until Dawn was very fucking buggy. It was very buggy. It is, you know, and granted, we're also dealing with a game that was in, I don't want to say development hell, but in development for a long time, that originally started on the PS3. They're taking a lot of older technology and bringing it forward to the PS4. And even with Sony's funding on that, there were some corners that had to be cut. And that's completely understandable when you're trying to just get this game out into work. It's a good premise. We want to get this game to market kind of thing. How do we make that happen? Do we have to compromise somewhere? I get it. And the PS3 was fucking notoriously hard to develop on. So it makes sense. But comparative to that, this is a breath of fresh air where you could tell, okay, they have a full bearing on the technology that they're working with right now. It's multi-platform, multi-generational as well. It supports on both PS4 and PS5 and Xbox, of course, with smart delivery and whatnot. This is a full-price $70 game, the first one really from them that, because I don't believe House of Ashes, I believe, even on what are now current-gen systems when I bought it, was at the standard $59.99 or whatever it was. But this is at that $70 mark, and, you know, I don't blame people for wanting a little more out of that, and I think they deliver on that part where this isn't something that I'm clipping through all the time or, you know, I'm not able to interact. Some kind of code is breaking somewhere that I'm not able to interact with collectibles that I'm finding, or I am, for some reason, not able to move through this next part of the level because I'm colliding with one of the assets in the background that just isn't letting me through or something like that. Or, like, this feels like a fully fledged, polished product. And I think a lot of people had worries whenever this was coming out that, oh, shit, like, we're not hearing anything about this. We haven't. It was announced in, I think, April, and it's releasing in June. Like, that's fucking quick. Like, we're not hearing much more about this. Like, and I guess it was to, you know, our dismay that, hey, you know, they just didn't have anything more to say about it because they've been sitting on this product for a while in terms of, you know, we haven't made another fully fledged standalone experience game like this since Until Dawn, you know, 6 years ago now almost, that it's like, sure, why not sit on this? You know, why not get this out, find a partner in 2K to help us get that beefy funding towards the end of it and make a really polished experience? And I think they really did that. This is the exact step I want them to take as a fan of that studio. And even at a 7.5, I'm very happy with that. I'm very much enjoying this. Do I think you should pay $70 for it? For the time you're getting out of it? Maybe not. But at the same time, too, you know, Black Friday runs around, or, you know, Amazon Prime Days, or, you know, the Steam sale pops up, because this is on PC as well. Grab it for, you know, $30-$40. Yeah, that's a good deal for this game. Play it. Even if you really enjoy these kind of experiences, you probably would find it still worth the full price for this, because this is what fans of us of this genre have been wanting out of this, and this style of game have been wanting, and I think it delivers on that. So I'm enjoying it. There are some bumps with it. There are some bruises with it. But I think overall it succeeds more than it fails. And you just kind of have to brush off some of the, you know, choice dialogue and performances that you sometimes get from, you know, some of the actors and, you know, writing that comes with the game. But at the same time, too, Until Dawn was the same way. And I fucking adore Until Dawn. Like, fucking... Academy Award winner, fucking, what's his name? Rami Malek, being in Until Dawn and giving the Godspeed, Pilgrim line is god-awful. God-awful. But I fucking adore it, and I think it's the funniest fucking thing.
Go ahead. I'll say, like, I haven't gotten to play the game yet. I've watched a little bit more since we last spoke, because I've heard some of the reviews coming back. And I noticed some of the quote-unquote issues that were happening with the game. Like, that was one of the first things I noticed, was just, like, some of the little stuff that was happening that you could tell, like, it obviously, like, that wasn't their plan, like, for some of those things to show up in the way that they are. But, you know, the game itself, to me, you know, looks pretty enjoyable. I mean, like you said, it's kind of like a campy horror game that you get to take control of, which, in my opinion, sounds pretty fun. I will say that, just to build off of what you said a little bit, as far as, like, certain actors in the game seeming to deliver their lines a little strange, you can tell, like, you always hear actors talk about other actors that they've worked with that are like fantastic to work with. Like, because they give good energy, they you know, it seems like acting, you know, not being a professional actor, I can't say for sure, but everything I've heard whenever people talk about certain actors, you know, they talk about how fun it is to act with those individuals, you know, because of, you know, they give you good energy. They take whatever's on the page and they can bring it to life, because it's a lot easier to act when you're getting like feedback directly from a human being standing right in front of you than it is for, you know, someone to be sitting there reading a page and be like, sounds, and then like in the in quotations or in parentheses, it says sound surprised. And then you have to say a line. Like, you don't know why you're surprised, because you might not have the time to even read everyone else's lines. But like in a studio situation where if they were able to get these people in person to act some of these out, you know, the game might've been delivered a little bit differently, but, all things considered, like, yeah, does it have its issues? I guess you could say it has its issues. Like, there are obviously things that I'm sure they wish were a little different. But at the end of the day, like you said, it seems like a good enough game. I'm certainly sitting on it for the $70. Like, I'm not going to pay $70 to get it. Not because, like, I'm not trying to say, like, they don't deserve it or anything. But, like, I just don't think... you know, I see it as a $70 game. I know the cost of development has gone up, and we've had that discussion over time, you know, on this show. But all things considered, Supermassive did a pretty good game. There's also the possibility, because I thought Until Dawn was spectacular. I haven't checked the Metacritic ratings. I'm sure it's probably like horror movies, and it probably gets some bad reviews, because like there's only so many plot, like, there's only so many ways a horror movie can go, and everyone knows which way it's going, right? And for this game, you know, there's a really good possibility that, like, they just hit a home run with Until Dawn, and they might never achieve that again. And I don't think anyone should be upset or mad if that is the case. I'm not saying that Supermassive is done. I'm just saying that, like, that game, I feel like, might be the best game they ever release. And that's okay, because it was a pretty damn good game. I don't know of any other studios that off the top of my head that might have experienced something like that, but like there's one hit wonders in music. So why couldn't there be one hit wonders in game development? But I do think that anyone I've seen that has completed the game or played it, they have similar sentiment to you, to like maybe catch this one on sale, but like they laugh and have fun with it the entire way, because even though it's cheesy and goofy, it's like, I feel like they almost encapsulated what it's like to be a teenager. Like, it's, I know that, like, there are teenagers nowadays that, you know, they have fashion advice and they dress accordingly and they have makeup tutorials, and the girls are like, do their makeup in a really good way, and guys have good senses of fashion. But, like, we wore fucking cargo shorts, and we were, like, at the end of the day, like, you're still a fucking teenager and you're still goofy as fuck. And, like, I think that the game does a pretty good job like showcasing how awkward being a teenager really is, in my opinion.
No, 100%. And to be quite honest and full transparency, like, normally when I tell people for holidays anymore, if they're like, what do you want for your birthday or Christmas or whatever, I just say Best Buy gift cards, because it funds my games for the year. Like, I'm very like, listen, you don't have to give me anything, but if you really want to, a Best Buy gift card goes a long way. Like, if I didn't have gift cards, I probably wouldn't have bought this at a $70 price. Like, I probably would have been like, I'm going to wait till Black Friday to pick this one up or something like that, when I can get it for, you know, 30, 40 bucks, something like that. But at the same time, I'm not like, oh, God, no, damn it, I wasted this money. Like, trust me, I've paid full price, like you have, Mike, paid full price for games before that didn't meet my expectations. Like, that I'm like, fuck, okay, well, I, especially when you're younger, too, like, you're like, oh, I want this licensed video game for this Nickelodeon show or something like that, not knowing as a dumb kid that it's probably not going to be great. Then you get it and you're like, fuck, this isn't a great game, but this is all I got for a while. Like, fucking better buckle up, Buttercup. But yeah, if you're interested, definitely, it's one of those things, if you're interested in it, pick it up, play it. If not, or you, I should say, if you're really into this style of game, pick it up and get it. You'll have a blast. I think it does a great job in what it's trying to do. But if you have an interest in it, yeah, maybe wait on it a little bit. Like, that's kind of how I see it. But anywho, Mike, let's head into the meat of our show, because we got a fucking lot to talk about. As many of you all know, obviously, we talked about it last week, and if you, you know, have been living under a rock or something like that for the past how many months or weeks now at this point, it's that time of year again. It's game announcement season. And obviously, too, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about what was the biggest event of Xbox this year so far, knock on wood, the Xbox and Bethesda Games Showcase, aka not E3 for this year. They held their conference this past Sunday, and also to an extended one as well, on, I believe it was Tuesday, that kind of went into some additional details on games, you know, deeper dives on some games that were announced that maybe didn't get as much gameplay shown and whatnot. But in general, their meat of the show was obviously on Sunday. And we got a lot of announcements, obviously, and the main one being Starfield, getting to see full gameplay, a deep dive on that. We'll get into that, obviously. Some bigger news, such as Kojima, the game that he is going to be making and developed by Kojima Productions, that is Xbox exclusive, was announced as well. You know, some big announcements that we saw, Redfall gameplay, things like that. So we're going to all go into it. I want to run down through it. But just kind of starting off the top, Mike, I want to kind of just get your impressions on the overall showcase in general. We know the narrative that was going around with Xbox leading into this. Obviously, after especially the Starfield delay, the Redfall delay, these games being pushed to 2023, the slate for 2022 at the time looking relatively barren for first-party exclusives, you know, or some kind of partnership games in general for that time. Games that really you're going out to buy an Xbox for, kind of looking a little barren. I guess looking at it from that lens, looking at it from this being, you know, Microsoft and Xbox and Phil Spencer coming out and saying, hey, this showcase that you are going to see now for the next, you know, 90 minutes, it's for the next 12 months. And it's, you know, it is primarily 99% focused on gameplay, 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 gameplay. No, you know, sure, there were a couple cinematics that popped in, but the vast majority was, we want you to see what you're going to physically be playing on your Xbox in the next 12 months. So how do you think they did on that level? How do you think they achieved with that, you know, knowing the narrative going into this? And just in general, what'd you think about everything that was kind of shown off the top of the, you know, show?
Yeah, for me, I was pretty excited to hear that this is all content that we're going to get within the next 12 months. I think that was a really good angle to take because, you know, it still could leave 2022 super barren, because within 12 months brings like the beginning of next year in, which seems to be when a lot of a blockbuster and big games are coming out nowadays, like the right after the new year in March or so, or so seems to be when a lot of these games are beginning to be like get released nowadays. But I think it was an interesting direction to take, obviously, you know, kind of just giving people a little bit more excitement for what's to come versus like, oh, you know, Elder Scrolls isn't coming till like 2026 and getting to see a little bit of that. Like, that's really cool. That would appease me, but it doesn't necessarily address the elephant in the room that, you know, Microsoft knows everyone's talking about it. They're not, you know, it's not like Microsoft's in a vacuum where it's like they don't know what people are saying about them. So I thought it was a really interesting direction to take. I'll say, like, if I were to give the top three things that I was most interested or most excited about, you know, first and foremost, it was cool to see some Diablo 4 content. I feel like, you know, coming off the back of Immortal, you know, they were getting shredded and, you know, arguably
a game we just, you know, just gloated and, you know, loved, you know, we talked about so highly last week.
Yeah. But like, I thought, you know, what they showed of Diablo 4 was relatively interesting. I am still holding cautious optimism because, you know, Diablo 3 was, for all intents and purposes, just kind of a stinker, because the Diablo 3 that you would have played in 2016 is identical to the one you play in 2022. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, obviously we're not asking for something crazy to happen with some changes, but like, every other game in that ARP genre, it has made changes to the meta or things of that nature. And I think, you know, people are rightfully a little bit upset about that. Focusing on more positive notes, I guess, not that Diablo 4 wasn't a positive. I'm interested to see where it goes from there. But I'll say that, like, another game that really caught my eye out of nowhere that I wasn't expecting was like Elder Scrolls Online, the High Isle expansion. I thought it was, you know, pretty cool that they're what they're trying to do there. They're still supporting that game, for better or worse in some people's opinions. But I thought that that was interesting, and it did look relatively interesting. Is it going to get me? Is it going to get me to hop on and play an MMO as a brand new player right now? Probably not. But I will say that, you know, it did, for all intents and purposes, at least get me thinking about the game, whereas before it wasn't even in my radar. You know what I mean? Fallout 76, The Pit. Obviously, The Pit isn't a new entry to Fallout. It's one that has been used before. I think bringing it to Fallout 76 really makes sense because, you know, first and foremost, geographically speaking, like, Pittsburgh isn't that far from West Virginia. So,
that makes total sense.
Yeah, that all really makes a heck of a lot of sense. But I think, you know, again, another situation where Bethesda could have tucked their tail and ran. They've been facing that issue head on and trying to release some new content and do right by, you know, the mess that they made with that game. So hats off to them for them to really, you know, kind of keep, quote unquote, spinning the tires on that. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, I think, you know, that game has come a long way. You know, it's a live service game. Those types of things happen. The fourth game that I would just like to touch on, I'm actually going to give five. Fourth game that really caught my eye quickly was, you know, I thought the gameplay from Redfall was relatively interesting. Am I going to play it? I don't know. That remains to be seen. It feels like they really caught the back end of this, like, really strange, like, vampire obsession that's happening recently with games. I know, like, people have always kind of been interested in vampires, but it feels like more recently, between V Rising and then the Masquerade, like, vampire BR game, like, it feels like vampires are really kind of getting this weird, like, obsession resurgence, which, like, it is what it is, but the gameplay looked pretty reasonable, and I want to, like, focus on the fact that the gameplay looked good. I don't really know that I care so much for the art style that it's going with, and that's okay. Like, I've said that about other games in the past where, like, I just generally don't care for the art style, but I'm the type of player who, like, I don't really give a fuck about the art style either. The gameplay is what matters to me. That's why I was still playing Diablo 2 without Resurrected in, like, 2020 or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, 800 by 600 game, like, I'll still play it. And outside of Redfall, the fifth and final game I want to just briefly touch on is, Woe Long, The Fallen Dynasty. I thought it was interesting. Team Ninja kind of coming back. I'm interested to see where this goes as a history person. It seems like it's going to be pretty sweet. And, you know, from Ninja Gaiden, of course, for me at least, barring, Ninja Gaiden, 3, I'm a huge Team Ninja fan, so we'll see where that goes. That's another game that I'm pretty optimistic and high on, and I could see that game being the one out of all of these that I pick up day one and play. I mean, Diablo 4 will probably be one that I pick up day one, for better or worse. Maybe, we'll see. But Woe Long, definitely there.
Fun fact with that, day one Game Pass. So there you go.
Yep. So it's free, quote unquote, technically, kind of free. And then also, just because I'm a Rick and Morty fan, I thought the High on Life game looked really funny. And, you know, I enjoy Rick and Morty a ton. I know there are some people that are, you know, the people that were, like, going and, like, laying on the floor and wanting the Szechuan sauce. Like, come the fuck on, dude. But, like, there are other people that are totally... There are people that are, like, normal human beings that like Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
And that's that. I would like to believe that I fall somewhere in between the people laying on the floor, like, basically having photosynthesis over Szechuan sauce and then, you know, liking Rick and Morty. So interested to see where High on Life goes. But that's, like, my quick hits from the showcase. Those are the things that I was really interested in, at least.
Yeah, definitely. And. I'm right there with you. I hope that I fall somewhere between that, obviously leaning much more towards the normal, sane human being, but also acknowledging that I'm definitely not a norm, same, nor same, like, in, or nor same human being, because I'm not. Let's be honest. I can't even fucking talk, so there you go. But, yeah, I hope I fall somewhere in between there, more towards the sane part. But Let's be honest. But no, I think my thoughts kind of generally fall pretty much like close to yours. Obviously, you know, Starfield being the game, like one of my most anticipated games, you know, really in general, outside of obviously Elder Scrolls 6 ahead of that. Just being a Bethesda stand, it was great to finally see that game, even no matter what it is. And we'll, you know, obviously get into it in a few minutes, being such a big topic of everything. But, you know, overall, I think this was a really strong showcase for Xbox. You know, yeah, all of these conferences that you have are going to have its lulls. Not everything is going to be for everyone. And fun fact, that's okay. That's how it's supposed to be. Not everything is going to be for you. But guess what? What they showed, and this isn't me being like, you know, Xbox fanboy or anything by any stretch of the imagination, but what this was basically just, hey, this is a big ad for Game Pass, once again, and why they're trying to market this as the best deal in gaming, because all this stuff, barring a couple of things, you're going to play day one on Game Pass. You know, so looking at it from a broad spectrum, like, to me, yeah, not everything, I don't play everything on Game Pass. I pick and choose, but what's nice is, if something does catch my eye, I'm able to jump in there at no additional fee to just try this game out. Like, give it a try. So, yeah, some of these games aren't for me, but that's okay. Like, looking through, like, there are stretches in here that, you know, yeah, I'm not the biggest League person, which I want to get your thoughts on this, Mike, but, you know, soon, but, like, you know, the additional benefit added from the partnership with Riot Games to Game Pass to get all champions unlocked in League, all content in their two League of Legends spinoffs, all agents in Valorant, like all these additional things unlocked just through your Game Pass membership. Like, I fell out of Valorant. I respect it. I fell out of it. But like, same with League of Legends. But like, you know, for those people, that's a huge fucking deal. Like, you know how much those goddamn champions are in League. Like, that's a fuck ton of money, man. Like, holy shit. So, like, or a fuck ton of time, too, to unlock all them. So, like, you know, it's things like that that, yeah, that's not for me. Forza Motorsport is not for me. Like, it's just not. I give, you know, Horizon a chance every time it comes out, but that's because it's an arcade sim. It's not, or an arcade racing game, where this is very much more of a sim racing game. That's not for me. I don't care about this style of rubber that's going on my tires to make sure it grips the road a little bit. Like, I don't care about that stuff, but there's someone out there who does. And I'm glad it's in there for them, that their whole thing was, if there's something that you leave, if there's something, their big thing is, I can already tell because it's been the same for the past couple of years that Game Pass has been the focus on, and why I think they achieved that in this conference is, if you find one thing in this conference that interests you, that's a win for them, because that means that you're more than likely to go, oh shit, that game actually does, you know, I don't play Halo, I don't play, you know, I'm not a big RPG guy, I'm not going to play Starfield, I'm not going to do this and that, but, oh, that indie game looks cool, like, oh, I'll have to remember that, I'm going to buy it on, oh, wait, shit, it's on Game Pass on PC, fuck, I'll pick it, I'll get on Game Pass for, oh shit, there's a lot of stuff, like, that one thing, it's a snowball effect. Like, and I think that's why they achieved so much out of this. Like, where from that broad spectrum, like, you know, yeah, like you, I adore the Elder Scrolls. And I've tried my hand at Elder Scrolls Online. I'm just not the biggest MMO guy. Like, Destiny's the closest I'm going to get to, like, a full-scale MMO. Like, I'm a newer player with ESO. I'm probably not going to jump into that. But I'm happy it's there because that game has a fucking dedicated fan base, and it's great to see the IP get that much traction and attention and that much content come out for it. Like, that's great, because there are people who are going to be hyped on that. Like, I probably will jump into Fallout 76 just to go into the, like, play the pit again and interact with that, because it's one of my favorite Fallout 3 expansions. Like, I want to go in and try that. And that's saying a lot. That's saying a lot if I'm jumping into fucking Fallout 76. So, but yeah, just in general, I thought overall, like, you know, there's something for everyone in this. And I think that's why Microsoft in general with these showcases continues to be kind of the talk of the town when it comes to their presentation with these showcases. You know, traditionally we see with, you know, in the past years, especially at E3 when we have the Ubisoft conferences or the you know, Square Enix or whatever, these third-party publishing conferences, EA Play, that so many people are like, did we need a whole conference to really get just maybe, you know, this one thing that nobody asked for, you know, that could have very well been, instead of a 60-minute show and really showing probably too much of your game to its, you know, only to hurt it, could have partnered with a Xbox or with a Microsoft or a Sony or a Nintendo to get in their digital conference and be a part of that, where you're going to have much more of an impact around a better narrative. Yeah, you don't get to control the whole fucking show, but you know what? You can make damn well sure that your fucking product that you're putting out is exceptional in that one moment, because guess what? If you're giving people you're not giving people what they want for 55 minutes, are you sure they're going to be that pleased about the 5 minutes you do give them of pleasure out of this whole thing? Like, you're going to leave a sour taste in their mouth. And I think what does, you know, that Microsoft did so well with this conference yet again is they weave that in and out, and they were able to give everything people want. Like, they were able to give somebody, everyone, at least something out of it that, okay, even if I don't have that, I have Game Pass, I'm interested in that. Even if I don't have that, you know, even if I'm not interested in that, I know this is coming, and, you know, I have Game Pass and I want to see what's coming to Game Pass. Like, I just think in general, these continue to be excellent just advertisements for Game Pass. And mm-hmm. That is their next gen system. So, or their current gen, I should say. Like, it's the Xbox ecosystem, you know, fueled by Game Pass. And realistically, this is their future. And I think they continue to really market that message well. And I think the best thing about it has been they came and said, next 12 months in gameplay, 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 gameplay. Because, granted, I love hype. Y'all know me by now, 155 episodes into the show. I love a good hype. I don't care if it's CG. I don't care if it's whatever. Like, I marked the fuck out in 2018 when they announced The Elder Scrolls 6. Like, I knew it was coming. All I got was a fucking JPEG, really. Like, it was literally closer to a GIF than an actual teaser trailer. But you know what? I was fucking ecstatic. I got chills. I don't fucking care. I was hyped. Like, yes, I know this is coming, but fuck it, man. Like, yeah. Like, but at the same time, too, I completely understand the criticism that comes from, you know, so many in the gaming community of, that's all well and great, but we want to see some of this pay off now. All these, you know, acquisition investments that we made, or that you guys have made. We want to see what we're actually going to physically be playing on this game, not necessarily a tease of it. We want to see something of substance come to this system that we're in on the bet that you're taking, 100%. But we want to see at least some of that bet start to pay off, you know, 3-4 years down the road into this deal now. And I think they took that feedback and criticism and really put it to heart in what they showed in this trailer, because it's all stuff we're going to be playing. So, you know, overall, I thought it was a really good conference. It wasn't, you know, perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it succeeded in the message that it seemed to be wanting to give. And that's what's most important with, I think, where Xbox is in the, you know, the platform in general right now. So, anywho, Mike, let's head into the show. Let's get some of the bigger things out of the way that we can jump in on. Let's just start with the big one right off the bat, Starfield. This was clearly the biggest, you know, tentpole game that was going to be shown at the showcase, that everyone was expecting gameplay. And we got gameplay. We for sure did. And what's best is we got an actual 15-minute deep dive of this game. It wasn't just, you know, hey, here's some in-engine stuff. Here's some, you know, gameplay montage real quick. Like, especially when the trailer started to, and they started showing, like, the, like, kind of like the editing that was going, that looked like it was going into a black hole, and you were seeing, like, quick snippets of gameplay. I was like, that better not be it. Like, Alana Pierce of once IGN, who now works with Sony Santa Monica and stuff and does content creation, and some with Funhouse as well, she was like, kind of said the same thing. She was like, oh my god, if that's the gameplay that they're showing, like, she's like, I will be a little upset. Like, come on now. Mm-hmm. But no, when Todd came out, gave a full breakdown of the game, a lot of things that we're going to be able to do in this game and the expansiveness of this game, you know, really is pretty impressive, to say the least. But Mike, I kind of just want to open it up. Obviously, you know, you and I are both big Bethesda fans. We have a very, you know, we're very have this affinity towards our games for a long time with the Elder Scrolls Fallout, yada yada. You know, where do you sit now looking at this? What did you think of this first gameplay? What do you think that, you know, obviously this being a day one Game Pass and Xbox exclusive now, you know, is this the game that I think a lot of people are wanting to be that first, you know, hey, this is the leadoff hitter now for this new generation of Xbox and specifically first party Xbox that they're hoping is going to come and hit a grand slam. Do you think, you know, from what we've seen so far, this is trending in that direction to this is going to be the experience that so many are wanting out of Bethesda, not only Bethesda, but for Microsoft in general moving forward?
Yeah, I really hope so. It looks like we're trending that direction, but the games that Bethesda's released recently, whether it be Fallout 4 or Skyrim, both look to be trending that way too. And some people would argue, you know, Skyrim kept it going, Fallout 4 wasn't that bad, whatever the case may be. I just hope that when they're taking on this new horizon, literally by going to space, I really hope that we get a true Bethesda written game where they kind of take the shackles off and just write. And that's something that Bethesda has always done so well, is write storylines. Like, again, we're always going to go back to Oblivion on this show, but like thinking about how great the main questline of Oblivion was, especially with Mankar Cameron's Paradise. Like when you really just like, let yourself go and just get on board with it. It's so good. And, you know, with Starfield, I'm just hoping that, because with Fallout 4, the gameplay was arguably there. With Skyrim, yeah, the gameplay and battles were pretty dry, but I feel like most Bethesda games have always been kind of just like, you know, there's not a ton of strategy with the battle.
You know, outside of really, I mean, the last time there really was, I would like to say, is Morrowind, for the sole fact of you're actually doing more D&D styled CPRG. Like, you're basically rolling, you know, a 10-sided die. If you roll this, you're getting a hit, like, without, you know, and not out front, but behind the scenes in the coding. That's pretty much how it is with, you know, combat in that game, where compared to, you know, modern Bethesda, quote unquote, modern Bethesda titles, it is much more just kind of what you see is what you get. But I wouldn't say you, me, Adam, general players who enjoy Bethesda games are going in there being like, I can't wait for combat. That's the one thing I play Bethesda games for. It's more so for these worlds that you live in and breathe in and immerse yourself in, mainly narratively and through dialogue and stuff like that. That's what you get out of these games. Not necessarily, I don't want, you know, a Call of Duty, you know, level of, you know, combat into this game or shooting mechanics in this game. I'm not looking for that necessarily. I'm looking for an RPG first and foremost. Like, I want to sink into this game.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And that's one thing that did kind of rub me the wrong way about Fallout 4 was, like, I basically didn't have to grind for, like, levels or new guns because I was always critting people by shooting them in the head.
Yeah.
And, like, when they introduced that, I mean, it is what it is. It makes sense. You should be able to crit your enemies if you shoot them in the head. But like overall with Bethesda, you know, where Starfield's going, a delay is actually like a pretty good step in the right direction, in my opinion. Like, I'm getting to the point where like, I'm fine with delays, man. Like, take your time, make your best game, and we'll be here, you know, we'll be here at the end when it's all said and done, when you're ready to release that puppy to the wild, you know, I'll be here. And, with Starfield, I do believe that it's trending in a really positive direction for a lot of different reasons. It'll probably be the first RPG that we get to play in space since since Mass Effect. And yeah, for me,
of like RPG-ness. You know, we've had No Man's Sky, and you know, I'll get into that probably in a little bit, but like, this is the first real like space RPG that you're getting really since Mass Effect Andromeda that is of that level RPG that you're playing, not crafting or, you know, not where that's the main focus. This is an RPG in space, like, period, kind of thing.
Right. And for me, it's like, you know, I am a huge, like, I enjoy RPGs greatly, and I loved Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, if this game can land somewhere on the spectrum of entertainment and twists and turns and storyline as Mass Effect, then, you know, this is going to be a smashing success, in my opinion. I do believe that Bethesda might, be aware of the mistakes that they've made. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that they use that as a way to, you know, going forward, make sure that they don't repeat those mistakes.
No, definitely. And I kind of get the same vibe of that as well. More so in the fact of, I think they saw the notes, especially on the cinematic nature of Fallout 4, and even, you know, Skyrim to an extent, but more so, I think, with Fallout 4, with being, you know, having a narrated protagonist and, you know, or a voiced protagonist, I should say, where, and, you know, aspects around how you're actually interacting and dialogue choices and, you know, things like that, that was much more linear in fashion and also too in presentation, I want to say as well, that you're kind of at least seeing a retooling of that right off the bat. Like when you're seeing, when we're looking at and seeing, you know, gameplay footage that we saw, and we're seeing interactions and dialogue and stuff, like the characters are doing the Oblivion Eye thing. Like they're doing the, hey, we're like they're doing what they did with Fallout 3 and Oblivion of, we're giving you a front focus look on the person that you're talking with. You're seeing their eyes, like their eyes are telling a story in terms of like what they're talking about, and there's slight movements with that, like naturally, much more naturally mm-hmm. than Oblivion, obviously, and Fallout. But like, they're clearly taking this feedback of, you know, where it was feeling more and more and more Golden Pathy in a way with Fallout 4 and Skyrim, and I think more so in even in Skyrim to a degree, but much more cinematic with Fallout in its presentation of that, where this seems like it's much more going to focus on actually having elements of the RPG aspects of it focus in on your dialogue choices again. Like that was one of the big things that stood out to me right away. Obviously, whenever they zoomed in, especially too, when it started talking about, hey, here are your traits and here are your, like, basically at first it was, hey, what was your profession? And it, which is basically your classes, the special mm-hmm. system, classes in, or special system in Fallout and the classes in Elder Scrolls. Your profession is pretty much your starting parameters you're going to take, but also too, having traits in there as well, just like, you know, quirks and stuff like that in Outer Worlds and, you know, elements that you could have both, you know, hey, you're getting this extra ability, but trading off with this, like you could choose to be an introvert. You could choose to be a diplomat. And like, they are even showing examples of characters saying like, oh, it sees here, it says here in your file, you know, when they're talking about, when you're talking with somebody from Constellation, or I believe that's where it was, or one of the other factions, they're saying, oh, looking at your file, I noticed that you used to be a diplomat. There is a way, you know, it's good that we need somebody who has a way with words because we're taking on this, we're doing this, like things like that, elements that felt so pushed to the side from in Skyrim and Fallout 4, definitely replaying those games very recently. Like I noticed very well that comparative to what I'm seeing, this is the direction I was hoping for. This is the direction of, yes, we could have, you can make things more immersive and more realistic within the game in terms of like, you know, what you're doing with in Fallout 4. Like, yes, you want to make, you know, character dialogue feel more natural. Yes, you want to do these things that, you know, make it seem like a more lived in and breathed in world, but that doesn't necessarily mean take away the aspect that is an RPG. Like, I play these games because I want to sink into them. Like, I the reason why I love Elder Scrolls and Fallout so much is for the fact that they are, you know, really one of the only franchises out there right now that I think truly capitalizes on the idea of these games aren't about the stories necessarily within our games already. It's the stories you craft, because this game is about you and the story you want to make within it. And I think really they're the one RPG developer who still does that the best, or capitalizes on that mission statement to a T as much as possible. Which I fully think this game is leading back into that. And I think too, like looking at it from, you know, the outside with, you know, some of the, a lot of people, I guess I should talk about the elephant in the room first and foremost, but so many people have been saying, you know, oh, it's all it is No Man's Sky. It's No Man's Sky, only going to be worse because it's Bethesda and this and that and blah, blah, blah. It's going to be buggy No Man's Sky and blah, blah, blah. My thing is this with that. Clearly, a lot of people love the state that No Man's Sky is in right now. It just won, you know, not this past year, but the year before, it won best live service game going right now. It is, you know, compared to where it was a few years back before that, as just a laughing joke, you know, that was in the gaming industry right now. And it completely turned that around. People love it, yada, yada. Like, that's great. My thing is, what the fuck is wrong with having more of that and having a different iteration on that? Like, yeah, there's Call of Duty and there's Halo. Well, you know, you can't have both of them. They both can't be there. No, we can't have Battlefield either. Medal of Honor? No, fuck that. No. We can't do that. Valorant? Call CSGO? No. Why are you bringing this up? No, we can only have one. Like, the point of gaming, and especially two genres within gaming, or any really art and entertainment medium, is to be iterative. It's supposed to be, you're supposed to, that's why people love having, you know, different authors take on, like, and I'm thinking comic books too, like, as someone who's a big comic fan for a large majority of my life, like, I have like three or four different writers who I think are the best Batman writers. Like, they all don't tell the same story. They tell iterative ideas that they have on them. Like, they build off of each other and they take different approaches on it. Like, that's what's great about this art medium and entertainment medium within gaming. Like, you want, like, there's a reason why, like, the Callisto Project exists while also Dead Space's remake exists. Because they're allowed to iterate on the formula. Like, there's a reason why, you know, people are excited for both, because you can have both. Like, I just don't get that whole, like, oh, this is No Man's Sky, and, you know, this and that, or it's No Man's Sky with RPG elements. Okay, that's fucking great. I don't understand how that's a bad thing. Like, you know, and if you have a problem with it, don't fucking play it. I don't know. Like, to me, that's, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, I'm not sitting here looking at, like, just looking at another game, like, okay, Diablo 4. I'm fucking hyped for Diablo 4 because I, like you, Mike, am a big fan of Diablo as well. But that doesn't mean I'm never going to touch another, like, fucking dungeon crawler looter, like, or I'm going to be pissed off that there's another one out there. No, like, if anything, that would make me want to obviously hope, like, okay, like, you know, Bethesda obviously has the backing of Microsoft and more money to put into, maybe they'll make a better iteration of the No Man's Sky formula with its RPG elements now and things like that, which will then push No Man's Sky to be better, or to push somebody else to come along to make something even better in that genre. Just because there's fucking crafting in space doesn't mean that's what exactly that game is. Like, I don't know. It boggles my mind that that's a thing of contention. Like, that's a good thing. You want people iterating on these things. You want different approaches. Like, we would never have some of the most successful franchises and, you know, icons in pop culture and things like that that people love. Like, you wouldn't have those things if it wasn't for, like, more people coming along and doing things. Like, I don't know. It was exhausting kind of reading, like, granted, Twitter's just a fucking, like, cesspool to begin with. But, like, reading some of the dialogue around that is just bananas. But I'm really excited for Starfield, obviously. I've talked so much about this game for so long. It's great to finally get to see it. I think overall, like, yeah, combat looks okay. But that's not why I play these games. I'm excited to see their take on the idea of, you know, having some crafting elements like No Man's Sky. I'm excited to see their take on actual vehicle traversal, specifically in space. Like, that's exciting to me. Like, and this is coming from a studio who, like, couldn't get horseback riding down, like, 15 some years ago. Like, but they figured it out. They got better. And clearly they've been working on this game for 7 years. There's a reason why. Like, it looks like they've taken their time and kind of really melded into that. And even Todd Howard, after, at the he did an interview with IGN a couple days after. I think it was actually right around the time of the extended showcase 2 days ago. But he talked to Ryan McCaffrey over at IGN with Podcast Unlocked, that he mentioned, like, you know, yeah, it sucks. We hate making these games take so long, but there's a fucking reason. Like, there's a reason. He didn't say fucking, but you get what I'm saying. Yeah. There's a reason why these games take so long is because they're becoming more and more expansive, and we want to make sure that we're doing these games right. He's clearly acknowledging, hey, we fucked up. We've done stuff in the past that you don't like. We're trying to get better at that. We're trying to take more feedback in, and we're trying to bring in more developer feedback on, hey, we shouldn't be doing it, or hey, we did this last time, it didn't work, let's do this instead, or let's try this, or hey, I have this idea, why don't we try this. He said he wanted to try to make this the game that he told as many people yes as possible with, this which is good, like, from the development staff of, we want to bring these ideas in that obviously, yeah, does it make sense to do, you know, this thing that's going to be, you know, maybe only 0.0001% of players are going to interact with on, you know, a regular basis. Like, should we spend this many hours trying to get it done? Maybe not, but hey, let's look at making this, then, this idea that players are really going to be working on exceptional. And that's what he talked about with traversal, especially too, the idea of flying in space. Like, yes, you're not going to, he already said, hey, you're not going to be seamlessly able to fly to a planet, go through the atmosphere, and land it yourself. No, you're going to be able to land anywhere on the planet, but you're going to pick where you land, and there's going to be a quick cutscene that is in and out in, you know, a couple seconds, and you're getting back to the parts of the actual game you want to play, because they probably realized, yeah, that's going to be fucking clunky to go and try to land a fucking aircraft on, you know, a spacecraft on a planet within an atmosphere and dealing with the physics that come with that, that players probably don't want to fucking deal with, whenever all it is just another barrier between them getting between two of the main gameplay elements that are in the game. Like, so it just boggles my mind sometimes with the discussion around it. But anyways, I don't want to stick too long on that one. Let's move on, Mike. Diablo 4, you kind of touched on the top. Admittedly, you are very much more a Diablo person than me, but I adore Diablo. It's very much a game franchise that is close to my heart as well, for a long time. But kind of talk to me about where your head is. You know, I know you kind of mentioned at least your top-level thoughts on. Obviously, we saw the new Necromancer character that's coming. We saw a ton of gameplay on specifically Xbox Series X that really is going to, I think, surprise a lot of people with how good that looks on console, and really how good the gameplay graphically and how the gameplay in general, how tight it looks right now. And granted, this is a game that's been in development for quite a long time. You know, kind of give me where your head's at on what you're hoping to get out of this experience. Obviously, like I said, new Necromancer character they announced, but where you're kind of at as we head into now, hey, this game is, quote unquote, coming out within the next 12 months. You know, where are you kind of at with that right now? How do you think it showed, even too?
I thought that it showed relatively well, gameplay wise. I thought that they've kind of, you know, heard a lot of complaints from the community in Diablo 3 about how cartoony and how lame it looked, or how dumb it looked, whatever term you want to use. Uh-huh. And I think that they went with a darker path with the new game. Uh-huh. The game obviously looks very dark. It looks, you know, like it looks like a dungeon crawler, kind of like you would imagine it would. It looks a
dungeon
bit more
crawler,
like
a triple A dungeon crawler in 2020 or 2022, mm-hmm. I should say. Sorry.
Yeah. It looks a lot more like a Diablo 1, mm-hmm. like, or a Diablo 2, like a lot darker. I thought that some of the things that they were saying, you know, sounded pretty good to me. Talking in terms of like, oh, like, you know, this character, you're able, like the Necromancer, you're able to make him with summons, you're able to make him with blood magic, or you can even combine both and make him with a little bit of both. Uh-huh. I thought that was pretty cool because, you know, there are certain builds in Diablo 2 and 3 that are super meta and that they're the best. And certain characters like the Necromancer in Diablo 2, for instance, just because I have a lot more experience with it, like, he's primarily best used as like bone magic and or poison explosion or poison nova with corpse explosion on top of it. But he's a very expensive character to make. You need a lot of high runes. And, you know, I thought a lot of the stuff that they were talking about as far as the customization was really cool. You're going to be able to make your character look however you really want your character to look, which I think is a step in the right direction. I think if there's one thing that everyone was on board for in terms of, like, speaking about Diablo Immortal specifically, everyone really enjoyed the character customization at the beginning, and that might be it for some people, or it might go further. But I thought that that was a positive note. I thought that the Necromancer being the fifth and final class is, like, take it or leave it, because, you know, they haven't had a paladin in a while, but, you know, I guess, you know, you're still going to get some of the other classic classes, which I'm sure people are stoked about. Mm-hmm. Diablo 4 specifically, like, getting into more of the gameplay and some of the things that, you know, specifically that I saw, the skills look fantastic. I think that if they stick true to their word, and that if the store is truly only for cosmetics, that's a really good thing to hear as a fan. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the argument could be made in Diablo Immortal that you can't buy gear. You can only buy gear that looks cooler. And then in certain other games like Lost Ark, like, yeah, you can't specifically buy gear that's going to make you, like, a GG character. Mm-hmm. But the gear that you buy just happens to have additional skills or points, and it does make you better. So, there's ways to get around it. Speaking about, like, terminology used specifically, it is a little concerning because they didn't use exclusionary language when talking about microtransactions as far as gear is concerned. They did say that it's going to be anchored around cosmetics, but they didn't say that, like, explicitly, yeah, you're not going to be able to you're not going to be able to do X, Y, or Z. You're not going to be able to buy your gear. You're not going to be able to do this. You're not going to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is a bit concerning because Diablo Immortal exists. And again, you know, when you're talking about Diablo 4 specifically, you know, there's two different universes that you could consider. And both of them are pretty bad when looking at Blizzard. Mm-hmm. There's one where, you know, Diablo Immortal wasn't necessarily created by them. They hired another company. But, like, there's one world where they didn't look at the game at all, and they released it and still stamped their name on it. Or they did, like, okay the game, and this is what we got. Mm-hmm. With terms to Diablo Immortal. And either way is really bad, in my opinion. And, you know, going to Diablo 4, I don't think that... I know that there's going to be a lot of people out there that are going to be like, oh, well, you can just ignore the fact that Diablo Immortal even really exists, because I don't think it's going to have anything to do with Diablo 4. Mm-hmm. And my rebuttal would be, sure, I'll afford you that. But, like, at some point, Diablo, like, they still thought that putting Diablo on Diablo Immortal, putting it in the App Store, and running it the way that they did was acceptable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from the get-go, they were getting backlash about the game, and they still came out with it, which you knew they were still going to release the game. Mm-hmm. But, like, there's plenty to go on about how bad Diablo Immortal is without even getting into microtransactions. Mm-hmm. And that alone begins to become a cause of concern for me. I have no problem, and you know, we've talked about this before. Like, I have no problem with them trying to capitalize off of their game with cosmetics, mm-hmm. like, strictly. Like, oh, spend $40 and get this really cool looking, like, you know, whatever it's going to be. Like, yeah, get this dye kind for of your skin gear.
Or whatever. Yeah, that's...
Or, like, with the Necromancer specifically, I guess, like, the one blood skill, like, you could change the look of it. Mm-hmm. Which, like, I'm all for. Like, capitalize, like, Diablo and Blizzard is going to have to capitalize off of some type of monetary system for their game for it to be profitable and for it to continue to get support. And however they decide to do that is probably going to come with a lot of backlash from the community. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where they need to be focused on, is, like, how can we create something or a system that we're going to make money off of that isn't going to cause the community to, like, want to wring our necks about it. Right. Mm-hmm. And to me,
What I saw from the Diablo 4 release, visually very pleasing. A lot of the language that they used was very concerning to me because, again, they never use an exclusionary statement for some of the facts that they were talking about. And after what happened with Diablo 3 and Diablo Immortal, mm-hmm. it's very hard for me to be all optimism. And there has to be some level of pessimism because the way the game was released and Diablo 3, for all intents and purposes, some people might say they liked it. I wasn't a fan, mm-hmm. and that's okay. They might never make a game that I like again. And, you know, I've come to terms with that, but like, that's when this release kind of begins to get a little sketchy for me. And this content, like this showing of Diablo 4 starts to get a little sketchy for me mm-hmm. because I still really don't know, you know, what we're going to get from it and what they showed. You know, I don't think that's like the whole story is being told because they weren't using the correct like terminology to basically comfort me. And I know it's not their job to get onto this, like this show. I'm not trying to be like, oh, like it should be Blizzard's job to worry about old Mike P here in Norvelt or in Stafford, Virginia, from way of Norvelt, Pennsylvania. Like, I understand that they're not making this for me, but like, there's a lot to be concerned about, just as much as there is to be positive. So right now, for me, the pros and cons list is probably about 50-50 for what I'm looking at with Diablo 4.
Yeah, and I'm a little more positive because I'm much more of a casual player, I guess, just in general with my history of it. But, you know, I understand the issues that can pop up with it, like the monetization issues. I want hard, concrete, you know, confirmation that, hey, I'm going to be able to get just as much out of this experience, barring cosmetic, you know, additions to this game that somebody else is who is going to be, you know, spend $1,000 on this game. Mm-hmm. Like, I want us to have the same exact experience out of this, barring additional cosmetics and things like that. But in terms of gameplay that isn't, you know, hey, buying an expansion or something like that, you know, I want this to feel like the experience is broad across the board for everyone. That, I guess, is my... I want this to feel like a complete broad across the board experience for everyone, which at times Diablo 3 didn't. So, you know, I'm hoping, you know, that changes and that becomes the narrative with this game moving forward.
Yeah, because like even with Diablo 3, like even when they had the Real Money Auction House, mm-hmm. like in order for you to succeed in the Real Money Auction House, you had to farm certain areas of the game. And the only way to get gear good enough to go farm those areas was to pay money for them. So, like, it wound up becoming pay to win based on that. And then they eventually got rid of the auction house. But, like, you know, they tried to monetize it, I guess, a little bit. And, you know, it wound up kind of biting them in the ass again. And it just seems like with regards to Blizzard, at least, it just doesn't feel like they ever seem to like learn their lesson. It just seems like they just keep coming back for more. Mm-hmm. And that, as a Diablo fan, is super concerning.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I completely understand that. Moving on, Mike, let's look at another. We'll stick with Blizzard here. Moving on, Overwatch 2. Just to kind of keep it brief, the big announcement really that comes out with this, not only, you know, hey, we're seeing this game at least go into early access in October of this year, but also free to play. And obviously only PvP is going to be released this October. PvE is still scheduled for in the campaign and, you know, single player experience as well, scheduled for 2023. But the big news being really the confirmation, yes, this game is going free to play. You're getting this game with no barrier to entry right up front. Obviously there'll be some additional costs to come with that, skins and, you know, battle passes and things like that. You know, on my end, as somebody who is an Overwatch player, has played Overwatch for hundreds of hours for a long time, like, this to me, like I've said in not that long ago, I think on an episode we really talked about with free-to-play gaming, where, you know, I said, like, okay, the community wants these regular updates to this game. They want live service elements to this game in terms of support, but you then can't turn around and bitch about it whenever they give it to you in an aspect that is free to play, but you get that support through battle passes and stuff. Like, that's what you wanted. That's what you're getting with this, because that's what you've been asking for. You want them to double down on Overwatch 2, on Overwatch with Overwatch 2, and you want them to give you the content that you want, and cosmetics and, you know, challenges and things to interact with this game that keep you coming back to it outside of just the standard gameplay. Like, yeah, that's it. Like, you should, I'll be honest, you should be happy with that. Like, that's what you wanted. That's what the community's wanted for so long. If it doesn't fit your narrative of, oh, well, you know, it's because I'm not getting everything handed to me right at once with it, then it's, you know what, like, I don't know what to tell you, because that's just not where gaming is in 2022 right now. Like, the realistic approach is that you're not getting that experience anymore traditionally, where you buy a, you know, a live service title and you're getting all of these things that are included with it forever and ever at one conditional price. Like, that's just not ideal anymore. I would love it if it was, but it isn't. This is, if you ask me, the best compromise that comes with this for what we as a community, I think, want to see with Overwatch, and not just from the professional end or whatnot. You know, I'm happy with it going free to play for the fact that I'm going to be able to not only play this game for next to nothing, but also too, I'm going to be able to physically pay into it and get content for it back that I want. I want more skins for my heroes that I play. I want, you know, to be able to, you know, do challenges and buy a battle pass and see progress that's made. Like, I love Overwatch. I love the gameplay over loop, or I love the gameplay loop with Overwatch. Like, that drives me back to keep playing this game, because I enjoyed the gameplay of it. But at the same time too, like, I love grinding out these battle passes. Like, right now in Destiny, I'm grinding through the new seasons out, and I'm grinding through the season pass with that, because it's fucking fun. I like getting the loot. I like seeing the progress with that. I like working towards something as well. Like, I love Destiny's gameplay loop in general. That's why I keep playing it. But it is a hell of a nice value added to it when I also can look at something and say, you know what, I could work towards this if I do this many bounties and these quests and stuff, and I could, you know, get this amount of wins doing this gameplay type. Like, to me, that's fun. And that adds me to keep coming back to it, because I want to get, you know, this cool weapon emblem or something like that. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. It's just for the fact that it's added value to this game that, yes, I'm able to choose if I want to pay for it or not, but I'm still getting the same gameplay experience. Like, this to me is a good thing. I'm excited for the fact that we're getting more content for Overwatch. It's free to play, and you're actually able to support this game and get something meaningful back that the community has been asking for. To me, that's a no-brainer. But just my two cents on Overwatch. I've been sitting on that one for a while too, leading into the game, because that's another one with it, it's another community that you feel like you just can't make happy with anything you choose anymore. It's the internet and video games. You're never going to get a shining opinion, I guess, on everything. So kind of moving on though, Mike, so we're not here forever, but looking at another big announcement too that so many people talked about, and we kind of talked at the top of the show, Hideo Kojima's new project. It's exclusive to Xbox, has been announced, this partnership that he's doing. It has some focus elements on that involve the cloud and cloud gaming, and this being, quote, the game he always wanted to make. That excites me. And I'm not the biggest Kojima fan. I like Metal Gear. I personally like Death Stranding. I know, Mike, you don't really have a lot of experience with his games. And we even kind of talked about this last week, I believe it was last week. This is a big get. This is, you know, it's one of those things that, once again, it may not talk to everyone, but to a hardcore gaming audience that does love and adore his games, that's huge. That's huge for Xbox to say, yes, we have this foothold within the Japanese game market that we can pull the biggest, we can pull the ace up our sleeve out on and say, we have the king of, you know, this market that we adore and that so many people adore that we want to get onto Xbox, we now have. To me, that says a lot. As well as the announcement of bringing Persona 3, Persona 4 Golden, and Persona 5 Royal over to Xbox, that many people, you know, figured, hey, that's never going to be in there. Like you talked about, Mike, with Team Ninja and Koei Tecmo, like, bringing their next experience, day one to Game Pass. Persona, all three Persona games are going to be on day one Game Pass when they launch on Xbox. Like, that stuff is what really, I think, kind of sealed the show for me. When you look at, one, their commitment to, yes, like you've said before, Mike, they acknowledge very much so that, hey, Xbox, its least successful area or market is the Japanese market. We want to change that. We want the feedback. We want everything that we can do to get not only a hold of, you know, obviously we want to make a killing in that sector of the business, but at the same time, too, we just want to be able to access this whole other area of content and region of content that our fans have been asking for on the platform, that we want to get a hold of you. Do you think this really kind of this trio of, you know, Japanese hits, boom, 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 really kind of solidified that, Mike?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, Microsoft has done a really good job business-wise of identifying weaknesses and then attacking those weaknesses to try to, you know, remedy or at least rectify those weaknesses. And, you know, this is just another case in point of them making a conscious effort to try to right their wrongs or, you know, see, you know, where they have opportunity for growth and then trying to capitalize on it. And the only people that are like really going to benefit from it are like us, the gamers that are actually going to play these games. It's super beneficial for us whenever a company owns up to an area like this, a shortcoming like this, and then does what they can to try to, you know, fix it. And in this case, it's going to be bringing a Kojima game to, you know, Game Pass.
Yeah, exclusively to Xbox. I mean, that's huge. So, you know, kind of looking through the back half of the catalog of things of the show, Flight Simulator celebrates its 40th anniversary this year. A lot of new content coming to that, including gliders and helicopters. Also, too, if you want to go fly a Pelican from Halo, you can do so in the game now. Mike, I would be remiss if we didn't bring up Halo. Obviously, it's Game Pass. We have to talk about Halo at some point. I would be remiss if I didn't bring up kind of our view on Halo from this conference and the fact of it not being at this conference. Do you think 343 kind of, I don't want to say like turtling by any means, but not is sometimes saying less more in a situation like this, where you have a game out that people are saying, hey, we want content for this X, Y, and Z with this game is wrong. Please fix it. Or we want to support this game, but we want the support from this game as well. Like it's almost like a No Man's Sky issue to a degree. Just the gameplay was a little bit tighter on that regard than No Man's Sky had a lot of actual just fucking technical issues with it as well. But from a content aspect, do you think this is you know, 343 or even Microsoft saying like, sit this one out, focus on what you're doing now, focus on getting the content out for season 3, focus on getting co-op out, focus on getting Forge done, focus on getting Project Tatanka, the Battle Royale out, focus on getting these things done, focus on getting this game into a place that we should be talking about it in a positive manner, or not in just a positive manner, but that it warrants talking about, because right now it feels like, what are they going to talk about?
Yeah. You know, it's just more par for the course for 343. You know, they love like all their personalities that are on Twitter, whether it be like community managers and those types of people. They love to, you know, tweet out information though. And people, you know, are looking for stuff, looking for responses to certain things on tweets. They love to play the victim and just block people. And they don't ever want to answer up to the questions that people like, the hard questions. And I can understand that to a certain extent, because like a lot of these folks are just like cannon fodder. Like they're just propped up to just get run over. And nobody that actually has the answers is actually accessible for the community. I mean, it's just more par for the course from 343. If you expected them to come out in heroic fashion, showcase a bunch of content, I mean, it's just like getting to the point where it's the definition of insanity for people, if you have any faith in them at all, to do not even just like do the right thing, just to fucking do anything at this point. Like they, you know, obviously are in the news for a lot of negative reasons recently. And it's just more just absolute and total ignorance and oversight on their behalf that the Juneteenth holiday thing comes out, and you know, of course they just shoot themselves in the foot, which is 343's default setting. I mean, it is what it is. It's expected at this point, and
again, I'm just not sure. Like, I guess concurrent players the other day was like 5,000 for Halo Infinite and like 4,900 for MCC. And like, I just want to ask the 5,000 people that are actually like playing the game, like, if you're just like going in and playing matchmaking every day, like, what the fuck are you actually doing? Mm-hmm. Like, there has to be something better that you could be doing with your life. I promise you. So, yeah, not surprised. Just more par for the course for 343. And, you know, the disaster that just keeps on, you know, ticking is just going to continue to do just that.
Right. Yeah. And that's where I do agree that, you know, at what point do you just say, like, and you kind of hit the nail on the head. The people who probably need to answer the questions that a lot of the hardcore community and community in general just have on this game of, you know, why technically can we not, or does co-op not work right now? Or why technically was Forge not able to make it in time? Or what are the, you know, what issues with X, Y, and Z on these maps? You know, why aren't these being addressed? Or, you know, why does, you know, just things with the game currently right now, like from a technical standpoint, those people really aren't the ones accessible. It's guys like Sketch who, like, he doesn't work on that. Like, he is literally the messenger. And like, yeah, your job is to be able to direct that and handle that well. And, you know, not necessarily, you know, turtle on that stuff. But like, at the same time, though, like, that's what I do. I do feel sympathy for a lot of PR and a lot of comms people that in situations like this that are sometimes just set up to fail. Like, you know, that's your game's in a state right now that sometimes less talking is better. Like, work on the game. Work on the game and get it to a point. And even if you have to re-reveal this game, like, I'd rather get to that point where you're not re-revealing, but like, hey, this is Halo Infinite 2.0 or something like that. We're doing this huge update to the game, and it's including everything you wanted from Forge and co-op, you know, that should have been there at the beginning, to, you know, all these additional game modes, a, you know, redone matchmaking system, yada, whatever the community wants. But things like that, where right now sometimes not talking about that stuff might just be the best, to just go black and go dark and work on the game. Focus on making the game the best possible experience it can be right now. Taking in community feedback, you know, that is, you know, that is justifiable feedback, you know, mm-hmm. not just like drink bleach and die shit. Like, you know, that stuff's like, okay, you could, let's not go there. Like, but
yeah,
you get what I mean. So
it's just, it's like at this point, the best thing that they've ever done for the Halo franchise was to introduce No Bloom, No Sprint, which was back in Halo Reach. That's when 343 took over, and that's the only thing they really did for Halo Reach. That's the best thing they've ever done for Halo, and at this point, we're at their fifth or fourth game release, I guess, if you consider MCC. Like, you know, it might be time to, like, at this point, Microsoft needs to start asking the questions of, like, do we just need to scrap this fucking, this entire company and try again? Like, I don't know, how bad does it have to get before that's the answer? Like, you know, you had a game that took like 6 years, that, you know, had a $500 million budget, and they missed the mark so bad. At what point do you just pull the plug on it? Because it's that, like, at what, you, like, you just can't believe it's going to get better at some point. Do you just wake up and smell the roses and realize that, like, this is the best it's going to get, and we need to go a different direction?
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, absolutely. So, and just kind of wrapping up what all we saw at the show, we got updates from Plague's Tale Requiem. You know, Mike touched on High on Life, the new Justin Roiland game that's going to be coming out from the Rick and Morty creator, as well as, obviously, we got gameplay of Redfall as well, Bethesda and Arkane's new project that's coming out that was supposed to be summer 2022 that got bumped to first half of 2023. Like Starfield, but from what they say, that's early 2023 now as well. So sounds like we can be getting that Q1, hopefully. But from what I see, it looks really, really interesting and really, really great. Almost has like Left 4 Dead elements mixed in with vampire hunting. I'm really excited to see kind of where that goes with an open world aspect. So both single player, multiplayer, looks really good. Mike touched on, obviously, Elder Scrolls Online, High Isle, The Pit as well, and Fallout 76. And then small updates we got to Scorn, Arc 2. Vin Diesel was still in Arc 2, unfortunately, which is just weird. And also, too, as well, a new Minecraft game coming, Minecraft Legends, that seems to be almost like a mix of RTS and RPG elements to it. But, hey, I think there's, you know, it's a little bit, like I said, a little bit for everybody in this show. And as well, too, before I even forget, Obsidian announcing not only Grounded, the full release of the game coming out of Xbox Game Preview in July, or not July, by the end of this year, I mean, in September. As well, they announced, Obsidian announced a brand new game, Pentiment, which has a very, very unique art style of this, like, 16th century Bravia, like, painting almost, which a lot of people who were kind of heard rumors about this game for a long time and things that kind of were popping up very much seemed like it is taking from a gameplay element, Disco Elysium, some of the aspects of that game as well, much more non-combat RPG, which very much seems to be the case, being like this crime story from it. If you know, I think this is a game that Adam is going to completely absorb himself in. this very much seems like first person I thought of was one, was Adam with one, it's Obsidian, and two, elements of Disco Elysium, a game that he loved. So I'm definitely wanting to get his take on this next time we kind of hang out and whatnot. And obviously, when we get closer to this, when this comes out later this year, I believe November, obviously getting his thoughts on the show and whatnot. But Mike, that's pretty much it from major announcements, I want to say, from the showcase. Yeah, overall, I think this was an overall positive showing from Microsoft. I think this was really what they needed to focus in on, gameplay being first and foremost, and also to saying, hey, this is stuff that as of right now is slated for the next 12 months to get on our platform. You will be hand in controller, we're hoping, to play all this stuff in the next 12 months. So, you know, exciting nonetheless, and obviously this means we still, you know, we didn't hear from Obsidian on Avowed. We didn't hear about Perfect Dark. We didn't hear about Fable. You know, we didn't hear about a lot of these projects that we've kind of been waiting on to hear that are these tentpole experiences for Xbox moving forward. But at the same time, too, I think, like many, I want to see what I'm ready to start seeing what I'm going to be playing on my Series X, what I bought into this ecosystem for, what I'm going to be playing on my PC through Game Pass on PC. Like, these things, my investments into the ecosystem, I'm ready to start seeing what that looks like, you know, firsthand at this point. So, Mike, I think that's going to do it for our show this week. Why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet? Talk about all we talked about, Starfield, Redfall, Diablo 4, all the Elder Scrolls Online stuff, a ton of shit from the Xbox Game Showcase. Where can people find you on the interweb to do so?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at TOYSXLDIER. That's Toy Soldier, but the second O is an X. Or you can find me on Twitch at MP_ToySoldier. I'll probably be streaming some Diablo 2, I'm sure, in the near future. So if you want to come talk about Diablo 4 and why I feel so harshly about it, feel free to come ask. Or if you want to come rant about it too, you're more than welcome to come do that there also.
One of us. Anyways, I'm your host as always, Travis White, aka Travelus, on most internet platforms, including at Travelus_ on Twitter. That's TRAVLESS_. You'd also find me streaming time to time on twitch.tv/Travelus_, same as Twitter. And if you want to play some video games with me, you can pretty much do it on any platform, but specifically on Xbox Live at just regular old Travelus. That's TRAVLESS, no underscore. And this, ladies and gentlemen, has been your newest episode of the Game Pass Gamecast, your weekly go-to podcast for all things Xbox, Xbox Game Pass, and of course, PC gaming, including news, rumors, and conversation around them damn good video games. You can catch new episodes of the show when they drop each and every Friday morning on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all other major podcast services. So be sure to subscribe, just rate, and review us wherever you get a podcast at, all that jazz. And follow us on Twitter at GPGC Podcast to stay up to date with everything regarding the show, video games, like, and our dope giveaways. With that being said, Mike, that's going to do it for our episode this week. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening, sharing, and being a part of our growing community. Game on. Wash your hands. Listen to the doctors. Black Lives Matter. And we will see you next week.